Heaton, I received a communication from somebody that is normally a very big fan of yours and has made the point that over the, that in the last episode, you seemed a little bit more amiable to collectivism than you would otherwise. Now, I drew the line that you had also been drinking before the show.
I had. I've been drinking and fishing. It was real chummy.
I have to ask you this, much in the same way that some people are a cheap date, are you a two beer communist?
Yeah, I think I'm fairly individualistic. I don't know. My goal is not to run as hard one direction or the other. It's to kind of develop an optimal balance, right? We might talk about this later in the episode, but when it comes to government policy, kind of the basic protocol I use is this thing that you want to use the government for. Is it yeah. such a pressing need that we would potentially jail people if they don't do it?
Sure.
And having established that, is your thing going to solve this problem? If you can meet those two criteria for me, I'll get behind you. And there are things that I think we should do it, right? So if that makes me a commie, then sure. I don't really see my point is to shoot down government. I see my point is to shoot down bad government.
Sure, sure. And this is exactly.
But also, for the record, I don't remember what we talked about because I was pretty drunk. Like, I remember Trains. I said fuck a lot more.
Yeah, you did say fuck a lot more, but if you're downtown and you're tipping a few back, do you get a little frisky for the government to seize your means of production? Like, is that something that you trend toward?
You know what? Here's what I am playing around with some ideas. I might do this on the political orphanage in the near future. We tend, this is very Heaton. Brace yourself for this.
Exactly. Yeah. Just denying my bid for a fun back and forth about drunkenness and political philosophy and immediately going to dry points of view. That's cool.
Literally, I was going to bring up the Emperor Justinian. I'll refrain from that brief history lesson on communal rights versus public rights and all that stuff.
All I'm trying to do is start an improv about drink plus philosophy. We can do this in a million different permutations.
Okay, just cut out all that stuff. Justin, it'd take a couple of six packs to make me a commie.
There we go. Right? Maybe, I don't know. Whatever. It's fine. We're here now.
And then there's me. I just wake up sober commie every day.
That's it. Stone cold
no
sober.
No booze needed.
From Austin, Texas, I'm Justin Robert Young. From Washington, D.C.
I'm Jen Briney.
And from Edinburgh, Scotland,
I'm Andrew Heaton.
And we're not wrong. On this edition of the program, we're going to talk about fascists, as well as whether or not Americans' politicians are just too damn old. Jen, how has D.C. treated you?
It's been really great. I had to bang out two episodes in my first 2 weeks here, so I feel like I just got here because I've done pretty much nothing. But last weekend after I got my episode done, I went for a run along the water, ended up in Georgetown, which is like famous, right? It's a university.
Tweed.
It's
very
gorgeous.
Tweed. It's a Tony
very
neighborhood.
Tweed. Very tweed, yes. And there's tourists all over the place. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll just run over there and catch the metro back. And I couldn't find a metro to save my life. And so I ended up like walking back through Washington, D.C., accidentally found the Watergate Hotel, which was exciting. Ended up kind of like in a parade with like Latin American countries all represented. There was devils running around on a Sunday. It was very confusing. I don't know what it was.
It's kind of racist to say, Jen, but please continue.
No, there were literal devils. I put it on my Instagram. Like, it was very, maybe it was like Day of the Dead type thing. Cause I know the Mexicans, like they celebrate that, but then there was Nicaragua and Colombia, all these different countries represented. And just, there was a lot of devils. I don't know. So just like strange DC stuff that I've just been wandering through and Yeah, I like it here. I like that I know the history as I'm walking around, as opposed to like Poland, where they're like, the king lived here. And I'm like, never heard of him. But here, I know the Watergate Hotel, you know?
How many hotels did he have his goons break into? Answer me that.
Exactly. So it's fun. And I'm finding myself giving myself a Trump tour, because like we saw the church where he held the Bible upside down, and mm-hmm. we saw Black Lives Matter Plaza, and we went to the Capitol. I was explaining to Joe, like, this is where they broke in, and this is why they picked the house side, because it's off of Pennsylvania Avenue. And we are just finding ourselves doing this because our recent history has been so bananas that walking around around DC, like, that's what he's curious about. And so we're finding ourselves just accidentally doing that all over the place.
The last time I was there, I did the January 6th walk. I walked from the Ellipse where he was doing the speech down to the house. It's a substantial walk. Like it's not next door. If people have not done it, it is a bit of a hike.
You have to really build up a good mob froth to make that work. You really got to get people frothed up.
You got
to
froth a little bit.
Good pitchfork. Yeah. Type thing,
like a latte. Yeah. Just whip it up.
Yeah, it's not close. And that was actually the walk that I was doing because I was confused about what the Ellipse was. So I found that, and I was walking down Pennsylvania, and that's when I looked to the right and saw the parade, and it was right in front of the Department of Commerce. And there's these fantastic buildings. They're beautiful and they're huge. And one of them is the Ronald Reagan Building. Apparently it's the newest one in the Federal Triangle. It's the only one that allows private businesses in there. So that just made perfect sense. USAID is in that building. So it was just like this, I don't know, like monument to whatever the hell it is that we've become, this country that helps multinationals. And it was just this symbolism was there. And of course I was a little bit stoned as I'm on this walk. And then all of a sudden I see this parade and it was just a very weird experience. You know, going from the Trump tour to parades of normal people and, you know, Ronald Reagan. And it was very fun. So I'm excited to continue to abuse substances and walk around this city.
DC is a fun town. I lived there twice. DC is a fun town. I think it is probably pound for pound the smartest city in America. If you just consider the population size and the general IQ there, I will note that it's one very, very specific kind of smart. It's just one kind of smart, which is why I love and hate DC simultaneously. Because I have lots of friends there. I really enjoy hanging out in DC. That could conceivably be a city I move to, but it is functionally an entire city of former student council presidents. So you're hanging out there, which I enjoy for a while.
Yeah. And then at a certain point it gets Tracy Flick overload. You are constantly amongst them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really like the few contacts I had here, like in political podcasting, have not gotten back to me. So I haven't really done a lot of the Tracy Flick vibe. I'm actually hanging out with the staff in the restaurant down here every day. So I'm more hanging out with the help, which is who I enjoy being around anyway. So I haven't really gotten into that whole like DC vibe.
You got to go to my favorite bar. Where Heaton? What was the
tune in? The tune in.
The tune in, yes. Which is next to the Hawk and Dove, where I used to drink. Joe Heaton, back when he was on the Hill, he drank at Tune In, and then his son Andrew Heaton moved 3 feet over in 30 years to go to the Hawk and Dove. That was where I used to drink with my degenerate softball group.
Well, I am gonna go. Is it by Capitol Hill?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If you go to Cannon Office House Building and you're exiting Cannon Office House Building towards Eastern Market, it's like a 5-minute walk.
Okay, because this is government funding crisis week, and so tomorrow and Friday I plan to go to Capitol Hill and just like see what goes on. Like I want to go to the Rules Committee.
Just park at the Tune In. That's all you need to do. The news will come to you. When I went there, I literally was there for 5 seconds. A lobbyist who works with the Democratic Party walked in with a smoker's cough that would peel paint and drank 5 screwdrivers in about a 35-minute span, and then went back to work. And in that process, told me every story that I would ever want, from the gossip about Joe Biden and how much much old people are being run out of the Democratic Party to electing socialists in the UK in the 70s. It was amazing. You will love it. It is the best.
Okay. Yeah, because it might be a late night, so it might be a good time for me to do something like that. Oh, so it's good intel.
Jen, while you're there, I'm jealous of some of my friends in D.C. Apparently, the CIA has started a podcast, and they have an invitation-only museum. So you want to contact them, see if you can get a museum tour. I'm going to do that next time I'm in town. I probably not, but for me, I mean, you might be able to do it. So like, go check out that museum. Let us know. Maybe they have like a cool exhibit on MK Ultra or some shit.
I don't want to be anywhere near the CIA's radar, so I'm certainly not going to raise my hand and be like, "Yo, this is who I am. I mean, do a background check on me and my political podcasting about you." Like, no way, Andrew. You're trying to get me killed.
Spoiler alert, Jen. You are already on their radar.
Probably.
I think I'd make a great disinformation spy because I hung out with some people back in D.C. during the day who told me I would make a very bad spy because, in their words, I'm too vaudevillian and I stand out. And so, because you want a spy to be very nondescript. You want them to be forgettable. Yeah. Say what you will about me. I kind of stand out. So what I think I'd be great at is if the intelligence community loop me in and they're just like, "Hey, Heaton, get really drunk and go over to the Chinese embassy. They're having a party and just tell everybody we're sending ships to Taiwan." Maybe we are, maybe we aren't, but it's my job to leak it. I think I'd be very good leaking disinformation while drunk. Just leaking everywhere, leaking across D.C.
And launching that plan on a podcast is perfect strategy to get yourself in there.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
This is why I'd be very good at spilling the beans when the beans aren't real.
That's true.
Well, let's swing across the Atlantic to the fantastic land of Italy. Giorgia Meloni has won the right to be prime minister of Italy. Her Brothers of Italy party will now lead the government. She said, after news came of her victory, that Italians have sent a clear message in favor of right-wing government led by Brothers of Italy. Thank you. She is set to win around 26% of the vote ahead of her closest rival, Enrico Letta, from the center left. Mr. Letta told reporters on Monday that the far-right victory was a sad day for Italy and Europe, but his party would provide a strong and intrinsic opposition. Now, I'm going to pause now for either Jen or Heaton. If you have any well-formed and educated takes on Italian government and the space in which Brothers of Italy will take the Italian coalition, I will pause now. If anybody has takes, go ahead.
That Bunga Bunga guy was pretty funny, but he's been out of office for like 10 years now. So I don't got nothing about these Brothers of Italy bit.
There we go. So one reference to Silvio Berlusconi, and that's pretty much it. That's all we got.
Berlusconi, very funny if you don't live there. Yeah, that's all I got. That's all I got.
I was assuming that none of us would have any particular takes, for which I don't either. But that has not been the case in terms of the coverage of Meloni's election. Indeed, I'm just going to read four headlines here from four different outlets. Italy on the brink of having the most right-wing government since Mussolini. MAGA media salivates over Italy's most far-right leader since Mussolini. The new Mussolini, frontrunner for Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni. And Giorgia Meloni poised to win Italy's election, becoming the most far-right prime minister since Benito Mussolini. Which, if Giorgia Meloni, the most far-right prime minister since Benito Mussolini, is her name, which would be long even by Italian standards, I would understand it. But the fact that this was repeated fairly abandon seemed a little bit odd, as well as the phrase fascist, neo-fascist, and proto-fascist. So here's what I really want to talk about.
Proto-fascist is my favorite.
I really want to talk to you guys about the phrase fascism, because it was thrown around quite a lot this week in reference to this story, for which, having read it and done an interview about it now, I think that the stories were hilariously poorly written. But let's stick with this. What is a fascist? Let's start here.
Well, I think colloquially, a fascist is a conservative you're afraid of, in the same way that a communist is just a Democrat you don't like. The terms are used bluntly, and they're painting very broad brushes, and they tend to be used in a kind of dumbass, reductive, false dichotomy sort of way in our country as well. Something that I think all three of us agree on is that just kind of trying to label everything as right wing and left wing is really, really reductive. And might I remind everybody, that whole stupid system comes from the goddamn French Revolution, when revolutionaries were debating about the veto power of the king. And I'll be goddamned if I let a bunch of dead Frenchmen label me. So there's this idea that everything can be reduced down to one of two things. And in that mindset, if you think that way, if you think all politics is a binary and it all is either left or right, then in that world, fascist just becomes a conservative that you don't like or that's scary. And a Democrat that's very loud about their things becomes a communist. I think these are very silly ways to look at it. I think of political ideology more like an org chart or a Jackson Pollock painting. There's lots of overlap, or like a family tree or something like that. I think that fascist can be used very, very broadly and tends to not really have a specific meaning associated with it, other than this person appears to be a conservative and I don't like them.
Yeah. So when I saw on our sheet today that you were going to ask what is fascism, I went like, I don't know. So I looked it up, because Andrew's exactly right. It just seems to be fascism equals bad, and therefore anyone I consider bad is a fascist. And so I looked it up, and Merriam-Webster's definition says it's a tendency toward or actual exercise of dictatorial control, characterized often by putting your nation or your race above the individual. So I think that's why we think of like Hitler, you know, and then there's a forcible suppression of the opposition. And so if you look at this Italian situation, even from my, I mean, I know enough, but this woman doesn't fit that definition. I mean, first of all, if it's super nationalist and yet her position, it's changed, but her position is that Italy's going to stay in the EU and she intends to do nothing to change that. She's going to keep Italy on the euro. So to have Italy somewhat subservient to this, you know, government in Brussels, that doesn't fit the definition. When it comes to Ukraine and Russia, she's a NATO supporter and has been unambiguous about her support for Ukraine, not Russia. So even the other dictators of the world, she's not siding with them. So it's, even though there's things about her to definitely not like, she's anti-LGBTQ people having equal rights, she's anti-immigration, like this is not a person I would vote for. To say that this person is a fascist doesn't fit the actual definition. But as Andrew, I think, correctly identified, is that that's a term that is being thrown around as you are of a more conservative ideology and we don't like you, therefore you are a fascist. And so in that way, that term is really losing any meaning or helpfulness in describing what's going on in the world. I see those headlines as nothing more than clickbait, because when you put Mussolini up there, someone's gonna be like, oh my God, and then click on it. And now your advertisers are pleased. I don't think that it's designed to help people understand.
Isn't that horrifying? Like, I mean, I feel like for the dialogue that we have gone through in this country, which has very much to the point of alarmism talked about how we need to be very aware of what our politicians are doing. We have to be very cognizant of what they could do, what tendencies they might have. We are very on a hair trigger about stuff like this. And yet we're just going to throw around fascism and Mussolini as if they're not the most loaded things you could say that isn't Hitler. In fact, we might as well just say, we wish we could write Hitler in this headline. We can't. So here's the GoBots to Hitler's Transformers, Mussolini.
That's the sneaky thing about this too, is it's not just the media incentive to facilitate clickbait. And I agree with that. It's when I worked in TV, it was real difficult to do a foreign news story unless it had an American peg. But if you put something like that in there, you could get people to watch it. I think you're right that it becomes problematic, and there are incentives within politics to paint other people that way. I shouldn't say incentives. There's like an inclination people want to do that. So fascism's its own thing. It's this kind of grab bag of really just sort of emotional reactions to things. It's not really like a cohesive political philosophy the way liberalism is. It's just this collection, but it's distinct from liberalism. And in the American context, like constitutional conservatives a la George Will are basically ideological siblings with liberal Democrats a la Adam Gopnik of the New Yorker. They're in the same general kit and caboodle. But what tends to happen is people really, really want deep down to be able to say, the people I disagree with, if you gave them enough steroids, they'd turn into goddamned Hitler. I'm the good guy. All the people I don't like, they're kind of like, they're sort of Nazi pupas. And if only if they had enough energy and gusto in them, they took some testosterone supplements, oh, they'd be goose stepping down the street. And this goes for everybody because fascism is distinct. There's elements that it shares with different political philosophies. It was like both the fascists in Italy and the fascists in Germany also considered themselves socialists. So the conservatives can look and go, well, fascism is actually a subset of socialism. And meanwhile, the progressives can go, well, they're traditionalists and they're chauvinists and they're misogynists. They're conservative. And I think that it's not helpful, not healthy to try and figure out how you can take your opponents and put them in a Hitler box.
Or any box in general. I mean, even that list of liberal and conservative and, you know, you're in this box with this person. Like, I think it's a way that people try to make it easy to determine who's on their side and who's on their in their tribe. But like these words, because they're thrown around so loosely, all of them have lost meaning. I just feel like so many good policy discussions devolve into labeling the policy or labeling the person who's talking about the policy. So instead of discussing, like, is it a good idea to nationalize our railroads? We discuss, is this idea a socialist, communist, fascist idea? Instead of being like, no, is it smart? Can we afford it? Like, I think the political labels, including fascism and communism, I think they serve as distractions in a lot of ways, because I found that I wanted to understand this woman's policies and I had to dig, and that's not good. It's not cool that I didn't know exactly what she wanted.
This is what bothers me from the journalism perspective. And thank God we can finally just talk about journalism. it was the same story. And I really do, if I'm going to get doomsaying a little bit, when I was blogging for a living, I noticed that there was a churn of blog information. If you had something that was covered by a slightly larger blog, then the blogs that were slightly larger than that slightly larger blog would largely just take what was written by that. And then you would find the places that were actually the super nodes, that all of the gigantic websites and the newspaper websites were all reading these bigger blogs. And if you went up the chain, then eventually you would just have this thing that was written on a tiny place that would get unquestioned throughout this entire chain and then run in the largest possible places. And that's what happened here. And it's not just blogs. Now it's every masthead that used to mean something in this country is unquestioning and seemingly not using any of their resources or the very smart people who work for them to lead with that coverage. And I don't want to, on the new episode of PX3, it's going to come out on Friday, I talked to the Washington Post's Rome bureau editor. He gave us a great interview about how, yes, the party Brothers of Italy that she ran is by three other parties the successor party of Mussolini's followers after the war. Also, she made a video that she read in English, French, and Spanish, so all foreign media could understand it, that she was not a fascist, had no interest in anything of the sort, and that if anybody says anything different, then it's being misinterpreted from whatever, right? That was mentioned not at all in headlines that just put her name next to the word fascist. And that to me is not only just bad, which, look, America's never been the bastion of international news, but like it was specifically kind of ugly, and it bothered me because I had the same experience that you did, Jen, where I was like, okay, well, it should be pretty easy to find her saying some fascist stuff. And it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting how all of those articles kept saying that her party originated with Mussolini, as if 100 years doesn't see a party evolve. It would be like describing the Democrats in international press as like the party of slavery.
The slaveholder party. Yeah. The
yeah.
slaveholder
yeah.
party. Yeah.
It's like, no, they're a little different now. The times have changed. Yeah. It's been 100 years. And they kept doing that. And they kept going back to like, the flag is the same. It's like, well,
the logo, there's a tri-colored flame. And it's like, there was more, I read more about the stupid tri-colored flame that is the logo for her party. And again, in Italy, spoiler alert, there's a million parties. There's as many parties yeah. in Italy yeah. as there are pasta strands in Italy.
There's the Catholic Garden Gnome Party. There's the Sicilian Separatism plus Star Wars Appreciation Fan Club Party. they have 80 of them. I think part of the problem that we're having right now, kind of widespread in the United States, both in media and politics, is that everybody is, not everybody, most people are engaging in this way of both understanding and communicating things as a my team versus the other team. You can watch a lot of cable television news, and it's as if at the beginning of every panel discussion they have, they go, we're going to talk about which team is the good team, which team is the bad team. And then they'll get into fights about, well, your team did this and our team did this. And one of the tactics that happen, because we're not actually engaging with thought, we're not actually engaging with governance or policy discussions, we're just trying to do this prosecutorial thing that you're the baddie, is people rely on ad hominem fallacies. And an ad hominem fallacy is where you basically say, this person is bad, therefore their ideas don't count. And that's not how ideas work. That's contrary to the whole liberal epistemological experiment we've been building for the last 200 years.
Yeah.
The one more thing I'll say about Giorgia Meloni specifically is that if you are indeed, even after this entire conversation and doing your own independent research, terrified of her and the effect that she might have on the world, please just hold your breath, because she will be out of power if the pattern of churn of prime ministers in Italy holds. I believe there have been 70 prime ministers since the war. They rip through them real fast out there in Italy. So with all things being equal, she might not be in the international stage for all that long.
She only won with like 25% of the vote because they do coalition yeah. governments. So it's not like she won with 80% and even has a chance of becoming a dictator. Like, that's just not how it works there. They don't have a system like ours where there's only two choices.
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole freak out in our media is just, it's leading Americans to think that there's something crazy going on in Italy. It's just not the case.
And that's, you know, look, America is a country that really only cares about the rest of the world when we can see ourselves in the reflection. And that, in my opinion, is the only reason why this became the story that it did, is because we're still in the Trump meta. Everything, he's the protagonist mm-hmm. of politics. And so anything that looks like a Trump or smells like a Trump, they're going to get a lot of coverage, because the clicks will dictate that if you write a story about Trump, it will get attention. And this was Lady Trump. So there we go. Mussolini.
Yeah. I want to differentiate between what the media is feeding Americans and who Americans are. I honestly think we would yeah. care more about the world if we were given accurate information that wasn't full of garbage. Like, I don't even think you have to care about the world to read that Associated Press article that you sent me and go like, I'm not learning anything from this. So yeah. I don't think that it's Americans that don't care about the world. Where are you supposed to get this information from if our media isn't giving it to us?
I genuinely don't think that it's necessarily anything special or bad about Americans. I think that everybody, humans, are self-interested. They want to yeah. know about the things that are around them. It just so happens that America is the kind of 800-pound gorilla on the international stage. So we don't really have to pay attention to a lot of stuff that happens around the world unless we're really interested in it, because we're kind of the marching band leader for so much, to the benefit or detriment of so much of the rest of the world.
Yeah. I guess I just feel bad that so many of us don't get the chance to go to Europe. So it's not like you understand what Italy is. I feel like this kind of coverage could discourage people from going because you think it's, you know, the next, you know, Hitler rising country. I think there's real danger in telling Americans things about faraway lands that are just not correct. And so in that way, I get really angry about it because there are Americans who want to understand, even though they can't physically go there like we have. And our country is being led astray by this bad journalism. And that's where I get like serious and pretty pissed about it.
There's also something of a cried wolf concern when odious labels are being too liberally applied. Anybody to the left of me is a commie or anybody to the right of me is a fascist, when actual truly odious characters that rightly do deserve those labels pop up, people are going to be inured to them and they're going to go, well, the media always blows us out of proportion. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's, there's some moral hazard going
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
If you're scared of going to Italy, don't. Keep those prices low, man. I want to go back. That place ruled. It was great. I did nothing but eat pasta, drink like 5 glasses of wine during daytime hours and 9 cappuccinos. And for whatever reason, I lost weight. I don't even know how it's possible out there, but it just, it rules.
Their food is fantastic. That said, I have a bone to pick. Like I've been to Italy twice. I had a great time both times. The second time I was there, going into an obligatory train joke a la Mussolini, I was on a train. It left like an hour late, and it was overbooked. So I had to stand in a vestibule with some fat guys and some prostitutes. That's fine. We're all kind of sweaty, but we go a couple hours and then it just stops for 3 hours in the middle of nowhere. And I grab a conductor. I'm not going to do the accent, but I grab a conductor and I was like, "Hey man, what's going on?" Excuse me. The train made a wrong turn. And I was like, it's on a goddamn track. How'd you fuck that up? So I personally am not that worried. I was like, I don't know. You fix that shit, then I'll get worried.
Well, I just found out in Italy that I'm a garbage person that likes too much cheese because everyone's like, oh, the pizza in Italy is the best. And I just found myself pissed all over the country that there wasn't enough cheese on the pizza. Like you could actually see the sauce around the dollops of cheese they put on there. And so I ended up eating a lot of pasta because I just didn't want to be angry about my lack of cheese. Yeah.
That is American pizza. That is a great success. So much of America is taking good stuff from other countries and then making it awesome. And pizza is a great example of that. Also, I'm going to be a little bit more pro-American here. I get, now that I'm in Britain, I'm becoming more of like a, hey, wait a minute, don't talk shit about my country kind of guy. So like we get all this crap about Americans being, not you, Justin, but just kind of in general, Americans are navel gazing and we half of Americans don't have passports. They're so blah, blah, blah. I looked into this. I did quantitative analysis of this, and the amount of Americans that have never left the United States is just about the exact same number as the amount of people in the European Union that have never left the European Union. The difference is that their countries are all the fucking size of New Jersey. So they, of course, they're going to go around. And when you look at the amount of people in America that have never left their state, it's about the same amount of proportionally of people in the EU that have never left their country. Like it's because we're on a whole continent and it's expensive to travel. And so we don't do it as much, but it's about the same.
It's true.
Yeah. Also, we like to beat up on ourselves.
And one more thing. Sometimes people will get mad when they see us Americans walking around and you'll hear them like, oh, they're so loud and fat. Why are they coming over here? Don't be mad at us for not coming over. Either we're going to come over where we're navel gazing. Make your fucking choice. Do you want us to come over and like be international or like don't get mad at us then?
I did make a connection there though, because Justin, you're right. You can eat a lot of stuff in Italy and not gain a lot of weight. And maybe it's because when we take something from countries like Italy, like their pizza, we add 2 inches of cheese.
2 inches
to
of
it
cheese. Maybe there's something there. I don't know.
First protocol. We look at new food and we're like, can we add ranch dressing to this? It seems like a thing that could use ranch dressing.
French fries and ranch. Perfect.
Patreon.com/we're not wrong is where you need to go to support this show. Thank you to everybody who continues to support this. We are rocking and rolling with our Patreon and we greatly appreciate all the support. This week, you are going to get a bonus episode. And this is the experience, by the way, if you're a patron. When you get this free episode, imagine if you then, when it ended, the party didn't have to stop. You could just hit play on a Patreon exclusive episode. A double barreled shotgun of We're Not Wrong is there for every patron. And this week we're going to be talking about Hurricane Ian and the Jones Act.
Justin, may I? Sorry, may I, Justin?
Go ahead, Heaton.
May I step in?
Yes.
Regular non-patron listeners are eating the equivalent of an Italian pizza.
Yes.
But our patron listeners are getting a whole 3 fucking inches of solid cheese on top of all of that.
We're stuffing the crust for you, baby.
Chicago deep dish level content for you, the patrons of We're Not Wrong.
Like last week when we talked about boobs.
We talked about boobs and people loved it.
I'm amazed we didn't get more flack for that.
I know.
And I was drunk. I ended that. I was like, man, we're going to get in trouble for this. Like, and I think it was fine. Turns out.
No. And by the way, it got even saucier after you left to the point where Jen called me a 13-year-old boy. Guilty as charged. But like that was the most positive feedback we've gotten for anything. Nobody had a crossword to say about the shop teacher in Canada with gigantic boobies.
We just need to discuss cleavage and busts more. That's apparently it. Come for the politics, stay for the bust discussions.
But legit, I think that's why we discuss these things, because on the Patreon, we know we're with our people. Because I would never have that conversation to the public, but I'll have it with our people. So yeah, we have more fun back there too, for sure.
It was a good time. Well, let's talk about something a little more serious. The current Congress and President of the United States of America are the oldest in the history of our nation.
Speaking of boobs.
The gap between the ruled and the rulers, the age gap rather, is the largest in American history. And you can ditto that for the federal court system. A new series by the DC Bureau for Business Insider, based on 4 months of reporting, revealed the following. Nearly 1 in 4 members of Congress are in their 80s or 70s, a level never before seen in U.S. history. Almost 50% of Americans are under 40, but only 5% of members of Congress are under 40. One of the most powerful legislators in modern U.S. history acknowledged to one of their reporters that President Ronald Reagan, while conducting a meeting in the White House, once forgot who he was. Current and former congressional staffers explained the lengths to which they'd gone to keep older lawmakers focused, engaged, and sometimes upright. Americans want term limits and age ceilings for members of Congress, per a poll that they commissioned for this series. And tech policy can often confuse and confound members of Congress, which, I don't know, might be a bit of a problem, considering that now most of our work is done, at least on some level, involving technology and the internet. So we'll start with Jen. Are our leaders too damn old?
Yes. And on my show, I've been accused of being ageist. I've had people discontinue their support for my show because of it. But I'm sorry, like, there is cognitive decline as you get older, and we are able to physically see it with some of our representatives. I think I personally am upset about it, because up until this year, I've been a Californian, and Dianne Feinstein, everybody knows that woman has lost quite a few steps. And yet she's still representing an enormous state that would be, I think it's the 7th largest economy in the world if it was on its own. And we only get 2 senators. So I think it's a real big problem. I don't really want people legislating the internet who don't understand it. We have very, very big questions about the future that I just prefer be legislated by people who are going to be here in that future. And I know that that sounds really harsh, but I think you're incentivized to care more and to be more careful and to not just listen to the moneyed interests when you're physically going to be here to experience the consequences of your decisions for an entire country. And so I'm very concerned about the age of the people that are making our decisions up there. I think there's also, and this is something I think has been going on for like 40 years, where these people haven't been retiring. And so all of the norms that I'm seeing that I get really upset about, like, oh, this is just the way it is that the bills are written behind closed doors with lobbyists. Like, That's not the way it is. But because these people are teaching the next generation of members of Congress, we are making these bad behaviors institutional almost, and just like passing this on. So I am, but even as I say this, I'm not in support of having like some kind of age limit, but I think it is up to us to replace these people that are doing a terrible job. I know I'm a broken record about this, but they are doing a bad job. They've set up our capital to function in a way that none of us, I mean, I didn't realize how bad the norms were and how bad the processes were until I started following it as closely as I do. I never imagined how bad it is. So, you know, I think it's less a symptom of like the age itself as it is these particular old individuals are the problem. Cause I do also like there's wisdom that comes with elders. So I wouldn't want to have zero 80-year-olds in Congress, but the fact that we have a quarter of the Congress in that age range, like that's an issue. So I just feel like we need to get some of these people out the door. Diane probably being the first on my list.
Heaton, are you going to stand up for these codgers?
Yes. I think it's dangerously young. There should be a minimum age of 90 to occupy either chamber of commerce. Same thing. I think I've kind of a similar position to Jen in that I think that I'm in favor of term limits. I do think we should have term limits. I think we should have methods in place to keep somebody from just staying there forever. But for me, that has more to do with somebody occupying that space for a long period of time than an old person holding the office. There are smart old people. I'm not really bothered by that. Some old people have cognitive decline. Some old people are smarter and quicker than I am. So I don't really have a problem with that specifically, and I don't really like the idea of there being a hard cap on it. So here's what I propose. Did you know, Justin and Jen, that we used to make Supreme Court justices ride horses? This was part of their job?
No.
So you know the term circuit court?
Yep.
Yeah. Like you'll hear that in judicial reporting. It's because the judges on a circuit court were literally riding circuit. They would ride a circuit around their area on horseback, and they'd go from courthouse to courthouse adjudicating. And Supreme Court justices were required for like really up to like, I think it was like 1885, 1890. We fucking made them go out on circuit. They goddamn hated it because they lived in Washington, D.C. And we go, no, you get on your fucking horse and you go to Massachusetts and adjudicate some trials. So what I think we should do is bring this practice back. And if you are in the Supreme Court or Congress or the Senate, every 4 years, you have to ride a horse from Washington, D.C. to the next closest state capital. If you fall off, you have to retire. If you can't do it, you have to retire. But if you can ride a horse around and there's no problems with you getting into traffic congestion or things like that, and everybody's like, nah, it seems like he's on top of his shit. You can keep your job.
So instead of instituting some form of medical test for which you would have a threshold, you want to go,
this is a medical
test. Want to go right to Game of Thrones and just say, if the senator can ride a horse, they are competent. And if they fall off or become confused, then I'm sorry, but we need to have a special election.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, well, because I don't want, what I wouldn't want to have, again, in favor of term limits, what I wouldn't want to have is I don't think it would be a good idea to have some sort of actual competency test administered, because I think that would get rigged real quick or selectively used if people were filling out forms and things like that. And unfortunately, one of the things that does happen is when somebody has been in office for a long time and they're very beloved by their district and their staff, the staff will very much insulate them and very much shield them. And keep it going for a long period of time. And they believe that they are doing the right thing. They are protecting this person that they love from embarrassment. And so the public may not know how bad they are. And they may not come forward and kind of reveal that. Hence the brilliant of my horse scenario. If Chuck Grassley gets on his horse and he's supposed to go to Fairfax, Virginia, but he fucking goes the opposite direction to Baltimore, he shouldn't be in the Senate anymore.
Wait a minute. All right. Let's flesh this out. You've now piqued my interest enough that we're going to put actual definitions around your ridiculous idea. But so you would put them on a horse and then they don't have anybody telling them where to go. Do they have to figure it out by the sun? Are they allowed to have their iPhone?
No, they could. I would prefer they have an iPhone, because that would, like, if they have the iPhone and they're not like smelling it or trying to poke a pencil into it, like they know how it works, then that's good for everybody. We're like, oh, look at him. He seems to be using Google Maps on that horse. Good. Okay. He's on top.
Jen, let me go back to a thing that you mentioned, because the Dianne Feinstein element of this does fascinate me. There is a cottage industry of DC news stories now, one of which is in this Insider series, but I've seen them in other places that are just inside the Democratic Party, unnamed sources telling extraordinarily worrying and embarrassing stories about the mental decline of Dianne Feinstein. This is not from the Republican side. These are sources that are coming from meetings that she had with Chuck Schumer and meetings that she had with other Senate leadership. What I propose, while I'm not poo-pooing Heaton's horse solution, is that, and doesn't even have to be a thing that is written into any kind of Senate rule, but we need to normalize the publishing of medical records. And it worries me that what we're doing right now in Pennsylvania, which is a weird race for a million different reasons, but Dr. Oz versus John Fetterman. But John Fetterman had a stroke a few months ago. He has not released his full medical records. And if he's not going to be compelled to release his full medical records now, as a relatively younger man that is about to enter into 6 years of service, if he wins that election, right now the polls have him do it, then he's never going to be incentivized to do it. Let's say he stays there for decades. If he's not compelled to do it now, it will never happen. And that's the kind of stuff that worries me, because if you were compelled to release certain elements of medical records that were standardized, and it wasn't just what you wanted to do, which is often right now just a press release, then there would be more mobilization and there would be more pressure to say, well, that's a worrying result. Maybe internally in the party, we need to think about replacing you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tend to go in the same direction, where like transparency is kind of always the answer, right? And, you know, Andrew mentioned that the staff members will feel protective of their bosses and they'll try and protect them. And I know that's happening with Dianne Feinstein, but I'm very thankful for those that are trying to get the word out to the voters to be like, you know, it's really up to you whether or not this person keeps the job. Now, I am angry at Dianne Feinstein for not acknowledging what's happening with her and stepping aside. The fact that she ran in that last election, I think is unconscionable, but there's a lot of things she's done that I find unconscionable. So I'm not surprised with her ego. But she did make that decision, and it was up to the voters of California to decide whether or not she was the best representative for us. And we didn't really know the extent. We knew that there were some rumors. Some of us believed them. A lot of people didn't even hear them because they're not that politically engaged. And so here we are for 6 full years with a representative who's also on the Intelligence Committee, by the way. Like, she's supposed to be policing our spooks, our secret government. And if she can't remember the most basic things, like who other senators are, this is not someone who's going to be doing a good job of, you know, really fighting the CIA for information that they're not going to cough up, you know, willingly. So I think there's really big repercussions for us not having this information. I mean, even in the West Wing, remember what a storyline that was, that Bartlett had MS and they tried to keep it quiet. Like, it's important for us to know the health of our representatives. And that is, unfortunately, it's just like with stock trading in members of Congress. Members of Congress have no incentives to force themselves to turn that information over. So short of going through the states and getting a constitutional amendment, I don't know how we force it to happen. But I think idea-wise, that's the answer. You're right.
Out of curiosity, because like I see the rationale for normalizing transparency of medical records for elected officials. This makes sense to me, but I'm wondering though, like saying that somebody has a heart problem or they've got a kidney problem, where it's like, oh, maybe they're going to die. I like that is of less concern to me if they're not like a general or something than just, are they having mental decline? I do not know the answer to this, but your medical records typically wouldn't just say this person has dementia on them unless you actually actively discuss them with your doctor. Right. And the reason I bring this up is I think what would happen in that instance then is that every member of Congress then would just have an off the record conversation with their doctor friend for anything involving senility or something. You'd never see it on there. I don't know. I'm open to this. I'm just trying to think of how we'd actually make it work.
I don't know. And I think that's why this is a pernicious thing. Add to all of that, that the reason why a Dianne Feinstein continues to get elected, despite the fact that there are people around her that are screaming to any reporter who wants to write it, that she is not who she was many decades ago, is because incumbency matters. Incumbency is so important, and we are so divided as a country right now that you are going to take the brand name, even if it is obviously not what it was. And hell, the fact that it was Trump versus Biden, both of which are not who they were back when they were younger men, and Biden's mental decline was written off and parroted by the media as stuttering, as if we haven't watched decades of Joe Biden talk with nary a stutter up until apparently
because again, he was a member of the Senate during the Carter administration, 97 president Jimmy Carter, former president. He was a senator during that administration.
And it's he was running for president in 2008. He's on stage saying that the only thing, every sentence that Rudy Giuliani says is a noun, a verb, and 9/11. The man was a great quote, a wordsmith in Washington. And now all of a sudden, when he has a problem getting things out of his mouth, it's like, oh, he has a childhood stutter that he got over. No, he's old. He's old and he's having problems with it. And that's understandable. It's human. But also, let's not gaslight ourselves and lie because you're afraid that it's a political liability. Like, we have to face facts about this stuff.
That's true. And even aside from mental decline, which like obviously we're all concerned about, when it comes to, is this person more likely to have a heart attack or something that could kill them in office? I have seen a lot of members of Congress die in the 117th Congress in office. It's a little concern how many of the old people are just popping off. And what happens when that happens, like what if it's a senator? We have a 50-50 Senate. That could shift the balance of power. Mm. And in the House of Representatives, you find an entire district that is unrepresented because then you have to replace the person. You have to have a special election. The Congress and the House of Representatives, it's only 2 years long. So if it happens relatively early, you could find yourself completely unrepresented for most of the Congress when this happens. And so even those other things, if they're perfectly fine mentally, but their heart is made out of Swiss cheese, I think that the constituents should be able to...
Too much pizza.
Too much pizza. Go to Italy, eat your pizza, then come back and serve in Congress. I think it's important that the voters get to factor that in because we're being left without all of the information that we need to be like, are you going to be physically available to represent me in this term?
I've got another program I want to run by you. I think maybe I mentioned this on the show or maybe I mentioned it on Justin's. I don't remember, but here's another. This doesn't have to do with horses.
Okay.
This is another idea, right? But this would deal with the Chuck Grassleys and the Dianne Feinsteins and the sort of permanent incumbencies of the world. This is what happens when you get elected to Congress or the Senate. The following election, you have to get 5% more than you did last time of the popular vote. And if you fail to achieve that, you're disqualified as a candidate and they redo the election. Because otherwise, if you had to get like 80%, that would mean that whoever got 20% won, right? But if you're in there 15 years and you're getting like 75% of the electorate, apparently you're representing them very well if it's that high. But I think having something like that where it's like, you're probably going to get phased out at some point, and we've designed it that way algorithmically. But if you're doing great, you can stick around.
I like that.
Well, I think you're the one thing I would say to there is like, okay, well, I'm going to run two third party candidates and ensure that that person never gets above the initial voting.
You'd need this with ranked choice voting. This would not work very well in a vacuum. But if you had ranked choice voting and you did my system and they got less than that threshold, you'd put them on a horse and you'd slap it and go, yeah. And then they'd waddle off back to their home for retirement.
By the way, I think Grassley would pass the horse test. I don't know if Grassley.
I think it would too.
Because he obviously.
He'd be tweeting as
he obviously writes his own Twitter. And you know it because, unlike Senator Feinstein's, it looks like an 80 plus year old man is writing his own tweets. I think he might do it.
And he also strikes me as the kind of guy who, like, he probably does know how to ride a horse. And that's probably like a very ingrained childhood memory. So he'll probably be able to do that long after he forgets that North Dakota is separate from South Dakota or whatever.
I just love how we don't have the infrastructure in this country for pedestrians to cross the street safely. And so now we're going to stick elderly people on horses on the 95. Like, okay, this is a brilliant plan. I mean, if you want them out of office, that's one way to go about it. Like horses and trucks. Let's see how that
no,
matches
we gotta
up.
Do it at night.
Also a good opportunity to see your senator. He's like, I never get to see him. And then, oh, they're stopping traffic because Chuck Grassley's crossing Main Street on his way to Delaware.
So wait, all right. Would they have to do it in their home state? And then they like get to their capital?
No, I think I want to be fair. So it has to be the same distance for everybody. It's not fair to go, oh man, in Alaska, you got to be real goddamn sprightly because you got to go from Juneau to wherever. No. I think from New York City to the nearest federal capital.
No way. This is such a red state bias. Because they have safer roads, there's fewer cars. But if you have someone who has to go from New York City to Boston, like you're just gonna die.
This what I want to be very clear in my very well thought out horse plan. I think what we should do is have everybody ride a horse from Washington D.C. to the nearest federal circuit court. They can pick whichever one they want, but they're probably going to pick the nearest one. Everybody has to ride the same track.
That's fair.
All right. Are you horse-pilled? Do you believe that Heaton has the plan to save the country? Well, then please write in werenotwrongpod@gmail.com. After last week's epic deluge, apparently we are in the refractory period for all of our emailers because we just got nice compliments. A friendly Canadian wrote, I think that you guys get too much flack. You have strong opinions. I don't agree all the time, but often I used to work at restaurants in my 20s and you all strike me as folks that would have been a lot of fun to work with in that setting and a hell of a lot of fun to have a few pints with. Ignore the meatheads who are afraid of a woman who speaks her mind.
Thank you. Yeah, I did get some misogyny on Twitter this time.
I don't like that he's calling me a woman. Oh, you might be talking about Jen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Jen, you worked at a restaurant too, right?
I was a waitress for 13 years. I worked at a lot of restaurants. There you go. I loved it. Mm-hmm.
Heaton, have you worked at a restaurant?
I was a waiter. I enjoyed being a waiter. I was a busboy and then a waiter. And I was a bartender, but I really sucked at that. They called me Earthquake, but I was a good waiter.
Why would they call you Earthquake?
Earthquake? Because I was just like, I don't know, spilling drinks and I don't know what I was doing. The people would order like a chocolate unicorn martini sniffle. And I'd be like, God damn it. I'd have to walk to the back room and open my little book, figure out how to do that. So it was just it was a mess. It was a mess. I should have been fired from that. But ironically, I got fired from a television show. I was much better.
Justin, did you ever sling burgers for cash?
I was never a bartender, but my family works in restaurants. They own restaurants up in the Pittsburgh area. And so that was always the natural thing. It was my first job under the table at a pizza restaurant, oddly enough, since pizza's been a theme here. Mm. But then in fact, it was mostly Italian restaurants. I mostly wound up working as a busboy or a waiter at Italian restaurants. Shout out to the Buca di Beppo on University Drive in South Florida, Davie.
Buca di Fagaccini.
What the hell was that?
You've never heard that before?
No.
That's from South Park.
Oh.
How can you work at Buca and no one's ever said that to you?
I think I might have been gone by the time that episode aired. It was a little bit ago, but
that's a shame.
I have a food anecdote. Can I share my food anecdote with you?
I mean, we've been so restrictive on the topics that you've been able to bring up so far. Yeah. So please.
I was at a funeral in Wales over the weekend and we went to a quote unquote Mexican restaurant. Yes! And I went, now if I ordered the tortillas, does it come with queso? And the guy went, with what? And I went I can't do a Welsh accent, with queso. And he's like, what's queso? And I was like, never mind. Never mind.
You can't get Mexican food in the UK. What are you thinking?
I agree with you. You cannot. You can get some weird approximation where a pasty person read a Wikipedia article about enchiladas.
I will say in Edinburgh, we had good tacos. Cartel tacos in Edinburgh were good. Yes.
Really?
Okay, yeah, I'll check it out. It was the worst Italian meal of my entire life in Edinburgh.
Was it at Bella Italia over on Princess Street?
I would not be able to tell you.
There last night.
I would not be able to tell you. It was around the corner from where we were staying. If I get on a map, I'll probably be able to pick it out. But it was god awful. Like one of the most horrifying meals I've ever had. Like it was just terrible.
Scottish people are good at circus food. That's because Scottish cuisine is kind of stuff you'd find at a circus, except made out of goat.
There's a lot of fried or sheep. Stuff. I should say sheep.
Sorry. A lot of fried stuff. Yes. Chips. You can get a fried pizza. That's there. The deep fried pizza. Deep fried Mars bar. Lots of fried food.
Hold on. Rewind. How do you fry a pizza? Like, is it like a calzone?
Oh, you can fry anything. You just chuck it in there.
Yeah. It functionally becomes an edible Frisbee in my experience. I don't know the magic of how to fry, how to deep fry a pizza, but they do it.
Huh. All right.
A man of culture writes, the ability to talk about informed economic, political, and humanitarian issues and big boobs on last week's show were amazing. Thank you. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Hey, thank
you. Welcome. We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio, whose most recent edition, our most recent series, is hosted by the editor of this program, Mr. Will Saddleberg. Hopefully people enjoyed the first episode that we dropped in the feed a little bit earlier this week, but Don't Explain sees our sprightly young friend Will explaining how a cliche that is as beaten into the ground and tired as the rock star biopic started as a brilliant idea and charting that journey from hither to yon. Go ahead and get it. It's in its own feed that you can find on all podcast platforms. edit that out, Will. Or I'll delete your show. I love it. It's great. We worked on it for a really, really long time, and I'm excited for it to get out there. Will is amazing in it, so everybody go check it out.
And I hope Will keeps all that in.
he should. I'm a horrifying boss. Heaton, what's going on?
So this week on the political orphanage, if your blood starts boiling when Jen and I talk about how frustrating it is that we have to live in this false dichotomy of red versus blue and left versus right and all that kind of thing, I've got a solid electoral reform episode. We're going to talk about multi-member districts. We're going to talk about proportional representation and dramatically expanding the amount of members of Congress. So some solid electoral reform over at the political orphanage.
Awesome.
And Jen, the reviews are in. People love chaps.
Yes, people seem to love hearing the details of massive amounts of corporate welfare. So, yeah, that episode is finally out. I read the whole damn thing. And so if you're curious about the details of the semiconductor law, because there's a big picture aspect to it too, that has to do with Taiwan. And it's actually the foreign policy of that law that has me more fascinated than the law itself. So yeah, I'm proud of that episode. It's getting excellent reviews. So go and check that out on Congressional Dish.
From the moment that I first heard about that bill, long before it was actually pushed through, long before it became law, I believe I texted Jen and I'm like, you need, like, having listened to enough Congressional Dish and understanding the stuff that gets tacked on, a bill that on its face is both about American jobs, foreign policy, and giving companies that are already massively profitable in the fastest growing and most vital sector in the American or in the worldwide economy a just untold amount of money. I was like, there's going to be some wacky stuff in there. And so yeah. I cannot wait to dig into it.
Yep.
And on PX3 this week, if you liked us talking about the age stuff, then the man who ran the bureau that created that entire series, Dave Leventhal, was on our show on Wednesday. And if you liked Georgia Maloney conversation, then listen to the Washington Post Rome bureau chief, Chico Harlan, on Friday's episode. So if you enjoyed either of those two topics, get more information on both this week on Politics, Politics, Politics. But that'll wrap it up for us this week. Till next time, for Jen Briney and Andrew Heaton, I'm Justin Robert Young. And we're not wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.